This week, we're going to be talking about injuries around the league, All-Star Weekend, and a bunch of quick takes. So we got a bunch of stuff to get to, so let's just jump right into it.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And yeah, ton to get to today. So let's just start by talking about some really notable injuries around the league. And I guess why these are so notable is because they're involving some very high profile players. And with this new 65 game minimum requirement to win awards, to be on any All-NBA teams, that has a lot of people talking. So I guess the most notable one right now is Joel Embiid, a guy who we were talking about a ton last episode with Andrew. And, you know, he got diagnosed a couple days ago with a torn meniscus, which is obviously really unfortunate. He was the front runner for the MVP, having an incredible season, just put up 70 points against the San Antonio Spurs about a week ago. And so, yeah, I mean, it looks at this rate that he's not going to reach that 65 game threshold, and it's going to miss out on a back-to-back MVP because of it. So, I mean, Hunter, what do you think about this? There's obviously a lot of discourse around him not playing in Denver. People were saying that he was ducking, and then maybe that contributed to him playing when he really shouldn't have. And has this made you question the 65 game minimum requirement rule that's been implemented?
Yeah, so I think just talking about the injury, first of all, I think they're saying there's a chance it's not actually torn, but definitely a very severe strain or some sort of, like, you know, some sort of knee injury. And they're debating whether to go through surgery or through physical therapy right now. So he likely will be back by the end of the season, well, and start into the postseason. Yeah, but like you're saying, you know, a lot of players around the league, including guys like Draymond Green and like even LeBron James, have spoken out against sort of the pressure that has been put on Joel Embiid. And the reason he got injured was because, you know, he played in this Warriors game. Because, you know, everyone's talking about the 65 game minimum and he's too soft and all this stuff. And ultimately, I disagree with a lot of the players. I think to get awards, you should be playing more than, you know, 75% of the season, 80% of the season. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, the sort of durability of players and like that sort of like philosophical side of things. But ultimately, you need to be available. You need to be there for your team. And let's not pretend like Jonathan Kuminga didn't fall on Joel Embiid's bad knee. That could have happened to any player in any game. You know, it wasn't just like he sort of had like a non-contact injury. This was, you know, going for a ball. That happens in the course of an NBA season to any player. It just happens to be Joel Embiid. And yes, was he pushing himself? Absolutely. But that's what this is here for, to incentivize players to play on light injury. Like, if this was serious enough for, you know, his coaching staff and his health staff to feel like it could cause some serious injury down the line from a non-contact injury, they wouldn't have played him. It's just that simple.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, to give some context to this rule, just to kind of base off that, because I agree with you, Hunter. I think that, you know, sometimes the best ability is availability, and you cannot be the best basketball player, the most valuable player, if you're not playing a majority of the games. And so, I mean, like, to give context, in the past 10 years, only one guy has won the MVP playing less than 65 games, and that was Giannis in 2020, which obviously had a shortened season, and he still played 63 games. And that's if you take it like as a proportion of the total games, it's still above the threshold that we have now with 65 out of 82. And you just look historically, like, I mean, guys in the 90s, right, like Karl Malone and Michael Jordan, David Robinson, these guys were playing 82, 81 games. And so obviously with the way that sports medicine has progressed and gotten better over time, we should be seeing guys play similar amounts. But I think that, yes, most of it is a culture issue. I think that, you know, the league has gotten too comfortable with resting guys for the postseason and taking nights off. And I do like this rule. Will it occasionally lead to some unfortunate circumstances where, like, Yeah, maybe a guy who like is just pushing to get out there, gets hurt and misses significant time, like we saw in this instance. Yes, but I think as a whole, collectively, it's a good rule.
Yeah, and it's important, right, to have be your star players playing. People from around the world come and spend lots of money to see these NBA games to see their favorite players. And if they don't get to see them, that's a disappointment to the fans. It's a disappointment to the NBA. And just it's an overall disappointment to everyone except that individual player. And that's selfish. As long as you have the ability to play, you should be playing. It's that
Agreed.
simple. And talking about like just like general like the health of the NBA, I think we have to talk about the fact that teams don't practice anymore. It's just something teams really in a week do not practice on a night to night basis. And I think that definitely has an impact on the health of these players. It might be counterintuitive to a lot of people, but I think these practices support the players and get them ready and warm them up for these games as opposed to them coming in cold and only playing in games. And also, guys are coming into the NBA playing basketball younger and younger at a higher level and being more serious from the age of, 8, 9, 10 years old. These kids are coming in and playing AAU ball, 3, 4 basketball games a week, sometimes 2, 3 games back to back. That does not support the health of these young individuals. Like the Ball brothers are a great example of how much, doing too much work can really destroy your body.
It's a good point right there. And that's more of a systemic issue. That's not really something the NBA has control over. But what the NBA can enforce is like, look, like if you have the ability to play, and even if you have to battle through like a couple smaller injuries here and there, like you should play. I mean, that's what historically the greatest players in the league have done. I mean, you look at guys like Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, guys who like, phenomenal generational players. Small injuries didn't stop them from suiting up and still giving the fans a show, and that's all ultimately what you're there to do. And so,
Yeah,
yeah,
I was gonna
go
say
ahead.
Michael Jordan played over 80 games in 11 of his, I believe it was either 15 or 16 seasons in league.
Yeah.
Now, we commend Mikal Bridges as this, crazy amazing player for playing 82 games every year, which again, that's an amazing accomplishment that he is able to play every game every year. I'm not discrediting him from that, but the fact of the matter is that I think we're glorifying something that should be normalized.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that we need to get back to that being sort of the norm. And I think the rule, although it's like kind of maybe it has a bit of egg on its face in this specific moment, I think that on the whole, I think it's a good rule. So
Yeah, I agree.
let's move on to talking about a couple notable injuries to some stars. Zach LaVine is out for the season, which is a bummer for you, considering you had both him and Joel Embiid on your fantasy team.
Yes, Rafa traded me Joel Embiid just in time for him to get injured.
I saw this coming. I knew it.
Made sense. I gave him Mikal Bridges too. I gave him a guy who's going to play every damn game.
Yeah, sometimes he'll put
But
up 10 points, sometimes he'll put up 25, but that's what you get
You know,
for
yeah, but
availability.
talking about the Zach LaVine situation, it's obviously clear now that no team is going to trade for him. And it's looking more and more like the Bulls just aren't going to make any moves coming to this deadline. We finally thought this was the year they're going to blow it up. They're going to do something. Zach LaVine's clearly unhappy. He doesn't want to play. And who knows if having this surgery is just another way for him to get out of playing with the Bulls this season. I doubt it. He probably has a very legitimate injury. He wouldn't just fake this. But it just seems like another wasted year for this Bulls team where they should have blown it up 2, 3 years ago. As unfortunate as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're only going to get worse assets in return as time goes on and as these guys get older. I don't understand why they don't just pull the trigger and say, okay, we have some quality guys, Kobe White, maybe we can keep Patrick Williams and build around him, get some young
Io.
guys. Oh yeah, Ayo Dosunmu. I mean, there's some quality young pieces here. And they can get some pretty good draft assets or young guys in exchange for Zach LaVine or DeMar. Or even a guy like Alex Caruso, right? Like a lot of teams, you look at like a team like Philadelphia or Milwaukee, like they'd be more than willing to throw out some draft assets in exchange for a guy who can help them win now. But the longer they wait, the more it's just going to blow up in their face and, it's going to be a disaster. So I really hope they end up making some moves. The trade deadline is coming up quite soon. I think it's February 10th, if I'm not mistaken. NBA
That sounds right.
trade. Regardless, they should make a move here. And if not, I think it would be a big mistake.
Yeah, talking about this last guy that I have, that's a big guy who's been injured, is Julius Randle. He is, I believe, has a dislocated shoulder. It's like a rough 4 to 6 week injury, so nothing too major. He'll be back. But just generally, this is a big blow to this Knicks team, who's been kind of really rolling as of late since this OG and Anunoby trade. OG was playing great, and he also has been sitting out the past 4 or 5 games with a light injury. Quentin Grimes also been injured. Knicks have just really been riddled with injury. But even throughout all of that, they've still been balling. They've won 9 of their last 10 games. They just lost last night to the Los Angeles Lakers. Without all their guys, they still put up a great fight. And this is a really scary team. I think that we really have to start looking at this Knicks team as a real contender when they're healthy, because of the way the style of play, very bruiser-esque. Just how do you feel about this Knicks team, and what do you think they'll be able to do without Julius and OG for the next couple of weeks?
I mean, I'm a big fan of this Knicks team. I mean, me and you were talking, and I was telling you that I think this Knicks team is a serious, Eastern Conference Finals contender. I think they're an incredibly gritty team, right? They're fighting on every single possession. They have a ton of guys that are just willing to do the dirty work on this team, whether you're looking at a guy like Josh Hart, Isaiah Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson when he comes back is that kind of guy. Obviously, Jalen Brunson just lives up to the moment and really. We have to look at this as such a fantastic move from the Knicks to get him. Because if you think about it, imagine if the Mavericks held on to Brunson, Luka, and Porzingis, how good that team could have been. And
Oh my
here we
God.
have, New York getting him on a very, very team-friendly contract, and he's just been balling. I mean, if the Knicks end up as like a top three seed, Jalen Brunson's name is going to be thrown around in MVP talks. He's so important to this team and is just so dominant as a three level scorer, which is incredible because he's a small guard and yet he's just able to put this team on his back, get to the rim. He's a lights out shooter, has an incredible footwork and a deep mid range bag too. And so I love Jalen Brunson as like that number one guy. And obviously Julius Randle has been having a great season too, as more of a like playing more of that bruiser style, like getting inside, getting more to the post as opposed to the 3-point shooting, which I think is going to serve them well in the postseason. And then you just have all these guys around the periphery. I mentioned a couple already, but like Dante DiVincenzo has been playing really, really well. In the absence of Julius Randle and OG Anunoby, who I think has been a fantastic addition, by the way. Guys like Precious Achiuwa, Malachi Flynn, Austin McBride, these guys have been stepping up to the plate. And I think it all kind of came to a head in that Knicks Pacers game where, they were so shorthanded and they had that comeback victory to win that game. It was a very emotional interview with Jalen Brunson
Jalen
after the
Brunson.
game. Yeah. So I think that I love this Knicks team and you can really tell there's chemistry there. So I'm huge on the Knicks this year. I think that this is the most optimistic I've ever been on a Knicks team in a very, very long time. And I think they have all the pieces to make a deep run this year.
You talked about their camaraderie. People forget that Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, and Jalen Brunson all won a championship at Villanova together on the same team. This is a team, they really do like each other. They hang out. Like, that's so important for a team. Like, so many players have talked about being on the court and off the court friends. And, like, those are two very different things, but they're two very important components to having a good team. And this team, they clearly enjoy each other's company. And also, another thing I wanted to mention that you had talked about with, imagine if Jalen Brunson had been re-signed by Dallas. Like, that's a very big what if in history. And I think that's going to go down very similarly to like the James Harden and OKC sort of fumble that the instead of Serge Ibaka, they let go of James Harden. Now, I think you
Yeah,
can
no.
draw a lot of parallels there.
And I think that at the time the move was made, I think that's actually the comparison we were talking about. We were saying that, like, this is New York trying to, getting that sixth man of the year candidate from a contending team and taking a chance on him and hoping he turns into a star as a number one option. I think that's exactly what happened. So, I mean, New York really hit a home run with that signing. One last thing I'll say about the Knicks that makes me optimistic about them is that what do we know about the playoffs, right? That's when the game slows down. That's when defense shines and carries you through. And the Knicks are one of the best defensive teams in the league. They just have so many guys that can play above their size, you know, really battle on every position. And I think Tom Thibodeau knows how to structure a really good defense. And so I think that is, even if the offense slows down a little bit, they can rest on their laurels and have the defense sort of carry them through sometimes. So that's why I'm so big on the Knicks. But yeah, I think that they do need
That's a good
Julius
place to
Randle
wrap it.
back for have something to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And Julius Randle's definitely transformed his game a little bit to me, be more postseason friendly. From there, I think we can talk about All-Star Weekend. We got the All-Stars were announced. We already know what the starters are, but I kind of just want to get into reserves, see who you think some of the snubs are, and who do you think should replace some of these injured players who won't be playing in the All-Star game. So first, I'm going to name the Eastern Conference reserves. That includes Bam Adebayo, Paolo Banchero, Jaylen Brown, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Maxey, Donovan Mitchell, and Julius Randle. In the Western Conference, we have Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and Karl Anthony Towns. So, do you think the NBA got it right this year? Do you think there are any snubs? And who do you think should be replacing Embiid and Randle in the East as the two guys who won't be playing?
I actually think for the most part I'm pretty happy with these picks. I mean, there's nothing I'm really upset about here. I think that for the most part the NBA hit the nail on the head with these picks. I think that there are a couple guys who are like, damn, they didn't make it, but you gotta understand, like, it's very hard for you to like pick one of these guys and then have to remove someone else from this list. So a couple guys that come to mind, obviously De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, as guys who are always in that all-star conversation. Obviously, I think they were both all-stars last year. And I think, you know, the Kings have been playing very well this year. Obviously, not like a top three seed like they were last year, but, you know, they're still a solidified playoff team. And so for them not to make it is pretty surprising. I wouldn't go as far as to say a snub because I think everyone else on this list really deserves it. And I don't know who you would replace. I mean, I guess maybe the weakest guy here in the Western Conference might be Karl Anthony Towns. And so that's a serious conversation you can maybe have. I know that you think that there's another actually Minnesota Timberwolves center that should have made it maybe instead of Karl Anthony Towns, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm definitely a supporter of the belief that Rudy Gobert should have been an all-star over Karl Anthony Towns. Look, it's not sexy. It's not fun to watch an all-star game, but we're not here to determine who is the most fun game to watch an all-star game. We're talking about who deserves to be an all-star. And Rudy Gobert has been the best defensive player by metrics this year. You can really see it in this Timberwolves team being the number one defense in the NBA. You know, they've really stepped it up. And they've made it work. And Karl Anthony Towns, when you watch this team, he's the third star. He's taken a step back and let Rudy Gobert shine. And he's, you know, in the on the corner, you know, hitting threes, you know, taking shots when he needs to and kind of getting out of the way. And it's really been Rudy Gobert who's been the centerpiece alongside with you know, Anthony Edwards to figure out how this team is really operating. You know, I think a big part of the reason that the NBA might have chosen to have Karl Anthony Towns over Rudy Gobert is kind of that sex appeal that the NBA needs to have in the All-Star game. You know,
Sure.
I really do think that's a part of it. And
Yeah, no,
you
absolutely.
know, also NBA players get a 25% of the vote. And NBA players notoriously dislike Rudy Gobert, just generally speaking.
Yeah. That's a good point. And I think, you know, Rudy Gobert kind of had a great response to like when he was asked about this snub in the media. And he was like, you know, I'll talk about my snubs when I'm giving my Hall of Fame speech. And that's true. I mean, this is a guy who's at this point like pretty much a solidified Hall of Famer. I mean, we're going to be looking at 3 to 4 defensive player of the years, like more to all defensive teams than you can count, and obviously a couple all-star selections here and there. So I think that, yeah, like it is, like I think there is some bias against him because he doesn't have the most flashy style that's conducive to the all-star game. And so from like a fan perspective, I'm actually okay with that. But from a basketball purist perspective, I agree. I think Rudy Gobert is the right pick over Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah,
I guess, yeah, go ahead.
another guy to talk about in this conversation for like Western Conference centers, Elprin Shengun. Obviously, the NBA valued winning this year. You can see that's evident in, Kawhi and PG having Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Brunson and Randle. So they put a lot of the higher seeded teams, they give them two guys. But, regardless of that, Alperen Şengün has been putting up great numbers on a very mediocre Rockets team. But this is a team that it's not like they're the 15 seed. They're fighting for a play-in tournament spot right now. And they've been led by Alperen Şengün, who's been playing incredibly this year. So do you think you could make the argument for him to be in that spot as opposed to either Cat or Gobert?
Yeah, I think that like Şengün is kind of just in that tier right below the All-Star game, just missed the cut for me. I think Lauri Markkanen is another guy in that kind of conversation. I would also put Domantas Sabonis there because I think that, he's the number two guy on on a good team, but I think Fox is in that Rudy Gobert conversation as guys that like very well should have made it and probably should have made it. But Şengün, Lauri Markkanen out west, I think that they're just missed the cut. They're very talented players, and maybe a year from now they're all stars. But I think that just due to the players above them and where their teams are, I wouldn't put them in that conversation. Another guy that's it is interesting that you mentioned how the NBA sort of values winning this year, because obviously Steph Curry is an all-star, and I mean if you're looking at it from a purely basketball perspective, Steph Curry is an all-star. The Warriors always in that 12 to 10 range this year, obviously have not been a good team at all. And then you look out east, Trae Young, right? Atlanta Hawks in a similar position, putting up arguably better numbers than Steph Curry, but doesn't make the All-Star game. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I absolutely thought Trae Young was going to be an all-star this year, putting up 30 and 11. We did a podcast where we talked about who should be the starters, and I went on the limb to say Trae Young should be a starter. I think that was obviously an exaggeration, but I think it just goes to prove how underrated this guy is. I mean, this guy wasn't just snubbed this year; he's been snubbed the past 2 years from this all-star game, putting up the same numbers every year. This is a guy who really does deserve it, and I can't say he's snubbed because it's not like I can say any of these players in the East don't deserve it. Like all these guys do. Bam, Paolo, Jaylen Brown, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Maxey, Donovan Mitchell. These are all players who really deserve the spot. But obviously, since you have two players injured in the Eastern Conference, I believe Trae Young will be replacing one of them. I know they're both big guys, but I don't think position matters for the All-Star game anymore. So I do believe that Trae Young will be replacing one of those guys, but it's unfortunate because there's just so much talent in the NBA now. It's almost unfair to only have, 12 or yeah, it's like what, 12 players per game, or per team for the
Do you
All-Star
think they
game.
should expand the All-Star game, put it to like 15 players, no positions, East and West, and that's the way that it is? Like the 15 best players in each conference because there's so much talent in the NBA. I know that's a conversation people have been having.
Yeah, I think 15 would absolutely be fair. I mean, at some point in the near future, we're going to see expansion teams likely in Vegas or Seattle and some other cities. Especially when that occurs, I think that would be a great time to increase the amount of all-stars for both sides. You look at that talent across the NBA, and you could make an argument that every single team has a talented player who could be an all-star level guy, right? I mean, we haven't even mentioned the fact that Ja Morant obviously isn't an all-star this year. Victor Wembanyama is going to be an all-star in the coming future. Chet Holmgren's going to be an all-star in the incoming
Jamal
future.
Murray
And
is a guy who's
Jamal Murray.
always just there, like right in the cusp.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously guys like Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, they're also on the cusp there. Pascal Siakam, like you could LaMelo Ball. There's an endless number of guys I could just keep naming that are always going to be in that conversation as long as they stay healthy. I mean, Mikal Bridges, another guy. And there's just so much talent around the NBA. They need to expand it. It's just inevitable. And also, part of the reason we feel like there's so many guys who are all-star level talents is because the guys who are older don't fall off nearly as fast because of the level of modern medicine and the way they started to take care of their bodies. Like, no year 21 or year 20 player was being an all-star starter in NBA history unless it was just out of respect. Like Kobe Bryant and Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade got those sorts of respect ballots, but that wasn't because they were playing well. And Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, these are guys who we could be talking about for another 4 or 5 years in the NBA if they really wanted to.
You know, it's insane. We're talking about Dwayne Wade, right? Like, he was drafted, what, a year after LeBron was? Or was he in the same draft class?
Yeah, he was 2003. He was the same draft
okay.
class.
Okay, I think I was thinking Dwight Howard was the one after. But yeah, I mean, like, we're talking about, like, yeah, Dwayne Wade really fell off and, like, acting like, you know, he was a predecessor to LeBron, but these are peers, you know, these are guys in the same draft class, which is just a testament to LeBron's longevity. You mentioned that Embiid and Randle are obviously not going to be playing in this game. So there's going to be a couple replacement picks. I think you already mentioned Trae Young, and I think we can agree he's going to be kind of the first guy to fill that slot. Who do you think is the second guy out in the East that should get an all-star nod as a replacement?
Ooh, that's sounds like kind of hard. Maybe it should be a guy like Damian Lillard, you know? I think wait, Damian Lillard's a starter. What am I saying?
Yeah,
he's a
the
starter.
starter.
What am I saying? That's I didn't see him on the list, so I don't know why I went to him immediately. But I think Jimmy Butler has to be the guy.
No,
Realistically.
Dude. No. I think Jimmy's
who do you think it should be? If it's maybe
I think they're gonna give
DeMar?
it not the I mean, honestly, actually, okay, look. Jimmy, I wouldn't be mad if they give it to Jimmy. I would honestly want to see Scottie Barnes get a nod. I think that he's
Ooh,
been
yes,
having a great
Scottie
season.
Barnes.
I mean, obviously, you have the Celtics guys, like Porzingis could get a nod too. He's been having a fantastic season, and I wouldn't be upset at that either. I mean, with how dominant the Celtics have been, if they had three All-Stars, you know,
I'll be upset if
they
it's
would.
Derek White.
Yeah, I mean, Derek White is a little bit of a stretch, but yeah, I guess moving on from the All-Stars, I want to actually talk about the other events, the three-point contest, the dunk contest. There's been a couple guys announced for the three-point contest. Jalen Brunson, Damian Lillard are both going to be participating. Who are some other guys that you would want to see in the three-point contest?
I want to see a three-point contest of like Draymond Green and like Yusuf Nurkic and just see what happens, you know?
They had
I
that. They
think
had Draymond Green versus Kevin Hart, and Kevin Hart
yeah, and
won.
Kevin
Remember
Hart
that?
won. I know. I realistically would love to see a 3-point contest of the centers. Yeah, honestly, I think I would love to see Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren participate in a 3-point contest. See some of these the unicorns, maybe Kristaps Porzingis. They could totally do a battle of the unicorns. You know, just like put 5 or 6 of the NBA's premier 7-foot-plus guys for, at the 3-point line and just let them go crazy. That could be really fun.
That could also turn out really badly. Cause I mean, like, one underrated aspect of the 3-point contest is you gotta be quick, you know, like you have a minute, right? Or I think they might have bumped it to like a minute and a half, to get all these shots off, right? And so you gotta be quick. And a lot of these big guys, you know, they're a little bit they take a little bit of time to get their shot off. And so we could be looking at where they're rushing their shot, Burke and everything, and have a Paul George-esque performance here. But okay. Let's on a serious note, like for the 3-point contest, who is like your dream lineup? Like, who would you want to see in
How many
this?
guys are you putting in it? Like 5 or 6 guys?
Yeah, let's just go with six. So we already have
Okay.
Brunson, Lillard.
Obviously, Stephen Curry, Trae
Yeah.
Young. I'm going to go ahead and say Shai Gilgeous,
Really?
Devin Booker. I would love
Shai
to see Shai.
Gilgeous? Dude,
Yeah,
he's not
I would
a
love to
great
see
three point
Shai.
shooter, though.
He's gotten a lot better. I'd love to see him. Or maybe Luka. I'd love to see Luka participate in a 3-point contest.
Yeah, I like that list. I think that Luka over Shai would
Yeah.
definitely be a lot better there.
I
Or
think that's
Duncan
fair.
Robinson, maybe. You know, he's always
Ooh,
a
yes.
flamethrower.
For sure.
I guess for the dunk contest, yeah, on that note, like, who would you want to
We
see?
have.
Pick like four guys, maybe.
Seriously, I want LeBron to compete in the dunk contest. I think it's time. You know, he's only got so much bounce and so much time left in him. Just for once, it's never gonna happen. But I'd love to see that. If I'm picking four guys, I'll take LeBron, Ja Morant.
I meant for this season, like for like this dunk
right
contest.
now. Okay, so I'll still take LeBron.
Okay.
I think I'm just trying to think of guys with some bounce around the NBA. Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine. Oh, well,
I
Zach
mean, is
LaVine's
that
out, so he wouldn't. So
yeah.
LeBron James, Aaron Gordon, Jalen Green. He's got some
Ooh,
crazy hops.
Jalen Green would be a great pick. Yeah.
And for my last pick, I'll take Zion.
Ooh. Zion would be amazing. I would honestly,
yeah.
as a contender, I would throw in, oh man, I'm blanking on his name. I know exactly who it is. Wait, let me think. Shaden Sharp. Sorry, I don't know why I was blanking on his
Yes, I would
name.
love to see Shaden Sharp. I was thinking Portland Trailblazers immediately when you said I'm forgetting his name.
I mean, obviously we had Anfernee Simons win it. I think not last year, but a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I want to see what's his name. Oh shoot. Who won it last year? The white guy,
Mac McClung.
Yeah, Mac McClung. I think we need to bring him back, even though he's not even in
He's
the NBA.
Mac McClung is doing it this year, I believe.
Oh, perfect.
I don't think they've really announced anyone who's doing it, but I think they did say Mac McClung is participating. I think that was leaked.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But ultimately, they need to do something different with this dunk contest because it's clear
Yeah.
the stars don't really value it, and you end up getting guys that you know first, second year players and other guys that you know aren't even in the NBA participating, even if they're great dunkers. I think it's just the sort of dunks that we see in the NBA just aren't as special anymore, especially with like the sort of professional dunking leagues and all these social media videos of even crazier dunks, you know.
Yeah.
Like I think it devalues the dunk contest.
And I think they have to innovate a little bit on the dunk contest. I mean, we saw them innovate a little bit with the 3-point contest, adding that that deep ball that's worth more, and that obviously added a little bit of excitement. But I think people are starting to get bored of the dunk contest. I mean, there's only so many ways you can dunk the ball, and I think that maybe they should try coming up with a new sort of game to replace it. We've talked about a one-on-one tournament, which would be cool, but who knows? I think that is something they should consider. I guess the last thing to talk about with All-Star Weekend is that there's going to be another shooting contest between Stephen Curry and Sabrina Ionescu from the WNBA for charity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? I feel like this was kind of random, but obviously
honestly,
Sabrina had that crazy 3-point contest last year in the WNBA All-Star game where she like set the record. So I think it's going to be interesting.
I think this is honestly a good idea. I think it gives some innovativeness. It's going to be something that people are actually going to tune in for because there's going to be already so much debate about it right now as it stands. Sabrina's going to be shooting from the WNBA 3-point line. Steph's going to be shooting from the NBA 3-point line.
I think Sabrina
and
actually said she's going to shoot from the NBA line.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I thought she was shooting from WNBA. I think that's what they had planned. But you know what? I really love that because, you know, it takes a lot of guts for Sabrina to go out there and, you know, shoot from the NBA 3-point line with Steph Curry. So,
yeah,
you know, just a lot of respect to her for that. And I'm going to look forward to that. That's something I'll actually tune into.
Yeah, likewise. I think that these kind of unique one-off events would be, you know, are cool. I mean, we're just waiting now for DeMarcus Cousins versus Brittany Griner. I mean, obviously, they were talking about that.
That needs to happen.
Yeah.
Brittle DeMarcus Cousins versus, you know, prime Brittany Griner.
I mean, that would be another fun event, I guess, to watch.
But really, the one-on-one tournament needs to come out. That's just, we all know it needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know, first to 3 points, all baskets count as 1 point, you know, and you get like, you know, 16 players in the bracket. Like, that's just, we need to see it.
Yeah, that would be super fun. I think that it would generate a lot of, you know, a lot of hype for this All-Star weekend. Moving on, let's talk about some let's just give some quick takes on a couple notable things that happened this past week. Don't have to spend too much time on them, but since we last did the pod, another 70-point game occurred in the league, and that was Luka with 73 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists on 75% field goal percentage, 8 for 13 from 3. I mean, Hunter, was this the best game you've ever witnessed?
I mean,
individually,
it was really incredible. You know, they were double, triple teaming him. It didn't matter. You know, like, I never got to witness the Kobe Bryant 81-point game, but like, I imagine this is sort of what it felt like. You know, adjusted for pace, I don't think, you know, it's quite as impressive. You know, I think Kobe's still in the zone realm, especially in an era where they were scoring 92, 93 points a game. But, you know, this is impressive nonetheless. And We shouldn't be taking these sorts of performances for granted, even though they're such common occurrences now. Obviously, in the last 2, 3 years, we've seen 6 or 7 70-point games between, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Donovan Mitchell. There's so many guys who are starting to do it now. It's just really incredible to watch.
Yeah, I think that it was amazing. Definitely one of the best performances I've ever watched. And I know people were kind of like saying, wow, the Hawks, what a terrible defense they had to let this happen. I don't think those people were actually watching the game. If you're watching the game, once Luka got to like 50, the Hawks were just blitzing him every single time, making him pass the ball. But, the Mavs were like, running picks to free him up and let him get the ball to take a shot. And Luka was being really crafty, splitting the double teams, getting to the rim, drawing contact. I mean, it was just an incredible performance. And tack on the 10 rebounds and 7 assists, like definitely one of the best I've ever seen. I still would say the best game I've ever witnessed with my own two eyes live was Damian Lillard against the Denver Nuggets in the, I think, 2021 postseason, where it was just clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot. They ultimately ended up losing that game, but I've never witnessed a player just be that dominant in the postseason, especially in the clutch too. Like that team was like on the verge of collapsing, but he just held it up on his back. So I guess with that, we can move on to the next topic here. The Cavs, obviously, they've been a little injured recently, not having Evan Mobley or Darius Garland, but that has not stopped them from dominating the NBA. They're 13-1 in their last 14 games. So the question is, if the Cavs end as a top three seed, which currently it looks like they're kind of on that trajectory, should Donovan Mitchell get some MVP love?
It's hard to say. Darius Garland's coming back right now as well, so that's some good news for them. But I think there's just too many guys right now who are in that conversation. I feel like typically you become an MVP either because of how good you are in the standings or because of how incredible of a year you're having individually. And I don't think being the three seed warrants, just to be in the MVP conversation just because of your seeding. And I think there's guys around the leagues putting up way better numbers than Donovan Mitchell right now on more impressive statistics. Like, obviously, Luka is a guy who's always in that conversation. Shea is a guy who's going to be in the MVP conversation. Likely not Embiid anymore. But, Giannis, Tatum. If anybody was going to be named MVP or in this conversation because of standing, it should be Jayson Tatum. And I don't think being the three seed warrants being there just because of the standing.
Okay, well, look at
How do you
this. The
feel?
Cavs are about a game back from the two seed, right? They end as the two seed, and Donovan Mitchell's like having an incredible season. Let's not forget, Donovan Mitchell's putting up 28, 6, and 6 on very efficient shooting splits. So, I mean, Cavs end as the two seed. Like, I mean, I think that he at least has to be in that conversation. I think that, you can take standings into account, but you also have to take into account team composition, right? The Celtics have. We're talking about four guys potentially being in the All-Star game, right? They have two bona fide All-Stars. That has to factor into it at least a little bit. So I think that, the Cavs have always been underrated. And I think that Donovan Mitchell as well has been sort of a guy that's been overlooked during his time in Cleveland.
That's valid. I wasn't really thinking about it like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him, like, if they were the two seed top five in the MVP voting. I think that's fair. But just talk about this MVP for one more second. If Joel Embiid isn't in this race, who are you giving your MVP to today?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, honestly, I think I would have to go with Shea. I think that, if the Thunder stay at the one seed in the West, I mean, he's putting up 30 plus, just leveled up his game to another level. His playmaking has gotten so much better. His defense, one of the best mid ranges in the NBA, and his ability to draw contact. And I think that he's just been having a phenomenal season. So combined team record and individual performance, I think that's an MVP level season. I think also, Jokic has to be in that conversation if the Nuggets climb back up, which, they're about 0.5 games back, so very well could. And I guess
Yeah,
like,
the top four seeds in the West are all within the game of each other.
So there's a lot of fluctuation there. And obviously like the Matt, like Luka could also be in that conversation, but that's currently where my head's at. What about
Yeah,
you?
I think you have to give it to Shea as well. I think the defense especially is what takes it to another level for me, being the steals leader in the NBA. Very underrated defender. We've talked about this multiple times in the podcast. Also, just the story, being the youngest team in the NBA, number one seed. They really elevated this team. Like, just this is a team that people thought, maybe would be in the play-in, maybe pushing for, the postseason, maybe the sixth seed. I thought I was being bold by saying they would be the sixth seed, and look at where they are now. So I think, Shea would absolutely deserve it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I
I
think
guess
we
moving,
can.
yeah.
Yeah, go
You want
ahead.
to take
Go
it?
ahead.
Okay.
You can do it.
I guess the next thing to talk about is the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, they're not a team we talk about a lot because they've been just sort of very middling team, hovering around that play-in spot, and haven't really done that much this year. I think that Mikal Bridges has been having a good season, but not a great season that we might have expected him to have as like the number one guy and, having this sort of team built around him. So I guess the question is, like, should Brooklyn think about blowing it up? Obviously, they have like a plethora of young talents, Nick Claxton, Cam Thomas, Mikal Bridges, Dorian Finney-Smith, if you want to put him in there too, and a bunch of other guys. And they've been receiving some pretty hefty offers for a couple of these players. Allegedly, five first-round picks. Five first-round picks. Yeah, you heard me right. For Mikal Bridges, two first-round picks for Dorian Finney-Smith. And if you don't think you could get like at least a few picks for Nick Claxton, or you don't even have to trade him, I mean, should the Brooklyn Nets think about blowing it up? Is that the right decision, or give this team more time?
Yeah, you gotta blow this team up. If you're the Nets, you don't want to make the same mistake you made last time. I think it's really time to blow this up because you have a lot of young value and a lot of win now players that teams are looking for in the NBA. You don't know how long this parity around the NBA is gonna last. Any player could jump ship at any moment, and the team could be and the NBA could become super unbalanced, and then there's just not gonna be that big of a market of teams buying out there. Right now, you have a lot of wings. A lot of the types of players that teams are looking for to just take them over the edge. And you got offered five first round picks for a guy who's going to consistently get you to the 10 seed if he's the best player on your team. So you absolutely take that deal. And it was, I believe, the Grizzlies who offered that. Just imagine what Mikal Bridges would look like on the Grizzlies alongside Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. That's an incredibly good defensive team. And that's a team that is absolutely a contender. You can get a lot of value for guys like you said, like Dorian Finney-Smith, Royce O'Neal, Spencer Dinwiddie. They have plenty of talent that teams would want around the league, and it's just not anything that's going to get them anything special.
Yeah, but I also wouldn't overreact too much if you're the Nets. I think that, you have guys like Cam Thomas, Nick Claxton, still very young, raw talents. I mean, Cam Johnson is, I think, a solid player. Mikal, I don't think Mikal is good enough to be a number one option on a championship winning team, but he could definitely be your two or three guy, like, and I think that he's
Yeah.
developed a lot since being in Brooklyn as like learning how to assert himself and really be that guy. On this team. But I think that, blowing it up is a bit of an overreaction. I think that one thing we've learned is that first round picks only mean so much, right? Like if you draft poorly, they're basically worthless, right? Or if it's a weak draft class and you're not able to get the guys that you want. So I think that if you're the Nets, do make some trades, right? Trade guys like Royce O'Neal, maybe Dorian Finney-Smith. Maybe look at trading Ben Simmons, and I guess he's coming back and he's looked pretty decent in his limited time back, but you can start sort of retooling for the future and maybe let Mikal and I guess this core stay together while also still building for the future a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't know if you're going to have another situation where like guys like Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or big market stars are going to want to come to this Brooklyn team. I just don't know that that's going to happen again. Like
I
this was not
mean,
a destin this isn't a team that people think of as a destination.
that's true, but what I'm saying is like even on the trade market, right? You want to keep a guy like Mikal, a guy like Cam Thomas on the roster so that you can make that blockbuster deal and get a guy like, not Kevin Durant per se, but like a guy of that caliber, right? Because even if they don't come in free agency, you want to be able to get those guys. And I don't think, you know, a handful of first round picks is really going to do that for you.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So, you had something you want to talk about with the Lakers, so I'll let you get to this one. We talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, so I was seeing some reports online from some pretty credible sources, honestly, guys who predicted the Kawhi to the Clippers move, guys who, not predicted, but like who had, you know, insider info on LeBron James going back to Cleveland after that stint in Miami. And this one is also about LeBron James, and that's that the Lakers are allegedly feeling out teams' interest in a LeBron James deal. So like potentially trading LeBron. And in terms of whether this is the right move, I'm conflicted because on the one hand, I get it from an organizational standpoint. LeBron's 39. He's going to be turning 40 this year, right? He's getting up there in age. And you don't know how long this is going to last. Obviously, like, I say obviously, but I actually don't really know this for sure. He's a free agent after this year, is he not?
He has a player option.
Right. So, I mean, you have the chance of losing LeBron James this summer. So I think that, you know, gauging teams' interests, who knows? Maybe it could be the right move. Obviously, I think that, like, whether you're actually going to pull the trigger on one of these deals is a whole different story. But in terms of just seeing what you could get, I mean, do your due diligence for, like, an aging star. Why not? I'm not that mad at that. But in terms of trading LeBron, unless you get some insane package back, like, I don't know, you the Pelicans decide they want LeBron James and they'll give you Zion Williamson and maybe like another guy, like Herb Jones or something, like in a few picks. Maybe that's a deal you want to make. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but you know what I'm saying? You like, unless it's a really, really compelling package for a young guy, a young star that you know is going to be your like number one guy for a while, then I wouldn't make that move. But I just thought it was worth a mention.
Look, I don't think the Lakers are really seriously considering anything. I think the Lakers are kind of thinking about that same thing you were saying. It's just like, look, we went through like the sort of Kobe decline, and obviously we paid respect to Kobe for being a part of our organization for 20 years, gave him that big contract, and we were bad for 6-7 years because of it. Obviously, the Lakers are still loyal to LeBron, but they don't have 20 years of history built up to the point where, you know, LeBron is the Lakers, you know, vitality. He's not the centerpiece of the Lakers' history. And yeah, you say, look, we still have Anthony Davis on contract for 3-4 more years, and we need to win while Anthony Davis is here. LeBron James is probably going to be NBA for another 2 years. Who knows where he goes if Bronny gets drafted, yada, yada, yada. Let's just see what's out there if we can get some good talent back just to know.
Yeah.
And obviously, LeBron and Rich Paul have talked about nothing's going to happen. And I do believe nothing is going to happen. It wouldn't make sense, ultimately. But I understand from an organizational standpoint why you'd make a call just to see what teams think.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. It's a wise move from an organizational perspective. Another thing I want to talk about is a trade. We can kind of just gloss over this one pretty quick. But Grizzlies traded Steven Adams to the Rockets for Victor Oladipo and 3 second-round picks. What are your thoughts? Who won?
Two players who are not playing at all this year and 3 second-round picks. I'm sure this is some sort of salary, basically.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm sure the Grizzlies are just getting off of their Steven Adams contract and getting Victor Oladipo in return. Really, it does not matter for either of these teams. I think it's really just trying to free up cap space to be able to make some other free agent acquisitions this offseason for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you're the Rockets, so I think that getting Steven Adams, I think he's going to be a rotation guy next year. Like, he's still a quality center in this league. I think it'll, like, you know, I obviously have Şengün starting at center this year, but, you know, if you want to bring Steven Adams off the bench, I think that'd be good. I think that what the Rockets sort of lack is size. Obviously, they have like Boban on this team and Jock Landale, but you know, those guys are not like top tier centers in this league. And I think that Steven Adams
Also,
is a good center. He's a above average center.
yeah, we have to talk about just aside from that, the Rockets are a young team that lack a veteran presence. I mean, you have like dogs on this team. You have a guy like Dylan Brooks. Jalen Green is a dog in his own way. But what you don't have is a real sensible vet who's going to tell you how it is. And there's no one better doing that in the NBA who's more well respected and more liked than Steven Adams.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I mean, I would say Fred VanVleet is kind of filling that role, and that's kind of why they got him, I think.
Yeah,
But
I think,
yeah.
but the not, but it's in a different way. Fred VanVleet isn't necessarily the vocal leader. He's kind of like the on the court. Let me show you how this leader. Stephen Adams isn't a on the court leader. He's an off the court leader. He leads by example, and he'll tell you exactly how it is, and he'll also be there right to back you up. It's just a different kind of leadership attribute that is, I think, a lost art in the NBA, and I think very few guys have that now. And I think it's a very valuable asset to a team. That not many teams have anymore.
Sure. Yeah. Can't disagree there.
But I think the last thing that I wanted to talk about was something I saw after Steph Curry's 60-point performance in a loss to the Hawks. Very disappointing for the Warriors. There's only so much Steph can do by himself, especially when Klay Thompson has 10 points on 14 for, or 4 for 19 shooting, and Andrew Wiggins has, I believe, also like 6 points on another 1 for 9 shooting or something
Well, one thing I'll
like
say
that.
about that, when Klay is off, it is one of the hardest things to watch. I mean, this guy is like airballing, he's hitting the bottom of the rim on threes. Like, you're just like, how is this
And he's just chucking
possible?
up the worst shots too. It's not even like good shots, like fading to his right, like 22 seconds left on the clock, like just
Yeah,
whipping
horrible
it.
shot selection.
But yeah, Steph Curry now joins Kobe Bryant as the only player to have ever scored 60 points at the age of 35 or older. Obviously, Kobe Bryant did this in his last game at the age of 37. He did take 55 shot attempts in that game, though. So, no disrespect to Kobe. I watched that game. That was the one of the most emotional games I've ever seen as an NBA fan. And really, that was such an amazing game to watch. That comeback against the Utah Jazz. It was
Yeah,
you really felt it. But
definitely.
Rafa, give me your top three players over the age of 35 in the NBA. For guys from the age of 35 to whenever they retired. And it can still
Okay.
be current players as well.
I think this one is pretty easy. I'll have LeBron James for obvious reasons. I mean, winning a championship.
LeBron's clearly number one.
Yeah, LeBron James. I think we have to go Michael Jordan too. I mean, he was still playing quality basketball. I don't know how old he was, but I think he
He won his
won.
last ring at 35, I believe.
Yeah, at 35. So, and then obviously, I think he was, you know, he was pretty good in his Wizards days. I mean, obviously they didn't win, but he was still playing some very quality basketball. And then I think obviously I'm gonna have to go Steph Curry. I think that Steph Curry, what he's done ever since being 35, has been
He
incredible.
also won an
Get
NBA
that.
title.
Yeah,
Or
won an NBA.
was he 34
I
when he won
think
the NBA title?
34. I think he dropped
Okay.
35, or he dropped 50 against the Sacramento Kings last year, past the age of 35. Or I guess
Yeah.
like while he was still 35. So
So guys who would be out on the outside looking in, would you say Kevin Durant is a guy who you would put
yeah,
there?
I think Kevin Durant's career is wildly overrated. I mean, look. When you take away the Warriors' rings, his career looks a whole lot worse, right? I mean, he hasn't
Yeah.
even sniffed a conference finals ever since, you know, being on that Warriors team. So I think Kevin Durant, when we look back on his career, he's going to be wildly overrated. And I think people are going to start to realize that.
Yeah. I think I definitely agree with you, and I think a lot of NBA players would also agree with you. Another guy maybe I'd also have on the outside looking in, maybe like a Karl Malone.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Karl Malone
He was pretty good
was,
at,
yeah.
Udonis Haslem. He was really good at the age of 40.
Yeah, I mean, he was averaging a lot of
But
claps per game, putting up some of his best numbers for that metric.
yelling at Jimmy Butler, three
Yeah,
yells per game.
3 yells per game. That's pretty amazing.
No, but in all seriousness, I think that's a good list. LeBron, MJ, Steph, and who knows? Maybe Steph Curry will surpass Michael Jordan in the, above 35 ratings one day.
Yeah, definitely could happen. But I think that's a good place to call it. Another great episode. I think by the next episode, we'll be past the trade deadline, so there's going to be
We
a
should
lot of
be.
deals happening. Really excited for that. Also, All-Star Weekend coming up very soon, so a lot to look forward to in the NBA. Make sure you stay tuned for new Timeout Talk, and we'll see you all next week. So, take care. Bye bye.
Peace.